Jaya Radha Mata Humba Kunavi Hari.
Paravitakacharya, also Teta Siddhashi, Shimad, His Divine Grace Abhaya, Chananada Bhaktivananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananda Goti, Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Namacharya Sahiras Thakur ki jai, Say, Ho Ho Shibhita, Chaitanya, Rabu Nichananda, Shidwe, Degadar, Ha, Shiva Siddhi Gaur, Bhaktivin, Vijaya,
Shri Shri Radha Krishna, Gopi Gopata Sayam Kun Radha Kunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturidam Kijai, Navadeepdam Kijai, Jagadathasami Kijai, Yuvanamai Kijai, Shimari Lasadevi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Mandu. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, we have a lot of people watching online, so I address them first. We want to welcome everyone from the United States, India, Gopi Gita, Sanjani Reti, Sukanti, Diridas, Radhaturna, Nikunja from New Zealand, Duka Hantri from the United States, and many other people. I don't have time to mention everyone's name, and devotees from Europe too. So today we're reading from the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 16, and we're going to read the chapter summary first. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So chapter 16 is entitled Executing the Hoyovrata Process of Worship. So as described in this chapter, because Aditi, the mother of the demigods, was very afflicted, her husband Kashyapa Muni told her how to observe vows and austerities for the benefit of her sons. Since the demigods were not visible in the heavenly kingdom, their mother Aditi, because of separation from them, was very much aggrieved. One day, after many, many years, the great sage Kashyapa emerged from a trance of meditation and returned to his ashram. He saw that the ashram was no longer beautiful and that his wife was very morose. Everywhere in the ashram he saw signs of lamentation. The great sage therefore inquired from his wife about the well-being of the ashram and asked her why she looked so morose. After Aditi informed Kashyapa Muni about the ashram's well-being, she told him that she was lamenting for the absence of her sons. She then requested him to tell her how her sons could return and reoccupy their positions. She wanted all good fortune for her sons. Moved by Aditi's request, Kashyapa Muni instructed her in the philosophy of self-realization, the difference between matter and spirit, and how to be unaffected by material loss. But when he saw that Aditi was not satisfied, even after he had given these instructions, he advised her to worship Vasudeva, Janardhan. He assured her that only Lord Vasudeva could satisfy her and fulfill all her desires. When Aditi thus expressed her desire to worship Lord Vasudeva, Prajapati Kashyapa told her about a process of worshiping known as Payovrata, which is executed in 12 days. Lord Brahma had instructed him how to satisfy Lord Krishna by this process, and thus he advised his wife to observe this vow and its regulative principles. So now we'll read text 1. Shri Shuka Vacha Evam Putreshu Nashteshu Deva Matadatis Tada Rite Tri Vistape Vajjai Parayattap Yad Anatovat Shri Shuguvacha Evam Putreshu Nashteshu Devam Matharatistada te tri vishtape doichai. Aryatapyadanatavat. Shishaguvacha. Evam putreshu nashteshu. Deva matharatistana. Arate tri vishtape doichai. Aryatapyananatavat. Shishaguvacha. Imam putreshu nashteshu. Deva matharatistada. Vitetri vishtape doyacha. Aryatapyananatavat. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Evam, in this way, Utreshu, when her sons, Nashteshu, disappearing from their position, Deva Mata, the mother of the demigods, Aditi, Tada, at that time, Rite, because of being lost, Tri Vishtape, the kingdom of heaven, Daichai, by the influence of the demons, Aparyatapjat, began to lament, Anatavat, as if she had no protector. So translation, Shukadeva Goswami said, O king, when Aditi's sons, the demigods, had thus disappeared from heaven and the demons had occupied their places, Aditi began lamenting as if she had no protector. So there's no purport to this verse, or the next one, or the next one, and so we'll read until we get to the purports. Text 2, Ekada Kashyapastasya Ashamam Bhagavanagat Samadir. After many, many days, The great powerful sage Kashyapa Muni arose from a trance of meditation, returned home to see the ashram of Aditi neither jubilant nor festive. Text 3. Asapatnim dinavadanam kritasana parigraha savajito yatanyayam idam haha kurudvaha. O best of the Kurus, when Kashyapa Muni had been properly received and welcomed, he took his seat and then spoke as follows to his wife Aditi, who was very morose. Text 4. Apya bhadram na vipranam bhadre loka tunagatam na dharmasya na lokasya vichyos chandanu vartinaha. O most gentle one, I wonder whether anything inauspicious has now taken place in regard to religious principles, the brahmanas or the people in general, who are subject to the whims of death. And so, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There are prescribed duties for all the inhabitants of this material world, especially for the brahmanas, but also for the people in general who are subject to the whims of death. Kashyapa Muni wondered whether the regulative principles which are meant for the well-being of everyone had been disobeyed. He accordingly continued his inquiries for 7 verses. Okay. So, Omagana Timidanda Shaganjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, there is a very bad word used in this particular verse, the last verse we read. And that word, maybe shocking to all of you, is duties. So this really goes against our cultural upbringing in the West. And I think most of you here are from the West. We've got 1 or 2 people from other places. But in our cultural upbringing in the West, we talked about this a little last night at the program we had. Our consciousness is more on me and mine. And in the Eastern cultures, your consciousness is more on what you're doing, your duties for society, your duties for your family, your duties for your nation, and ultimately your duties for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in governance of societies, that is when people are writing constitutions. Everybody's heard of a constitution before? Most governments have constitutions, except for the English government. In the UK, they don't have constitution. They do everything by just passing laws. But most countries have constitutions. So there's two philosophies of writing the constitution. One philosophy is called the philosophy of duties, and the other one is the philosophy of rights. So, of course, we are not against people having rights. In certain countries like the United States, we have a Bill of Rights, and we also have duties, too. So it's a balanced thing. Balanced duties and rights. So, in the Western conception, we are taught mostly about rights. And as far as the rest of society, you know, it doesn't really matter what's happening with the rest of the society. I have my rights, I have my life to enjoy, and even people neglect in Western society their own parents and elders who in the Eastern society they would be duty-bound to take care of. So, and that's not what I'm going to talk about in class today, because that's something that would really drive you all crazy if I kept talking about it, about duty. So, but let's talk about not so much a duty-based society, but what are our duties to life or to our spiritual master or to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so this is a subject matter that's dealt with extensively in the Mahabharata, the greater history of India. So in the Mahabharata, you find the conflict between, let's not even use the word duty, let's say the principles of Dharma, because the actual word here in the verse is Dharma. So the principles of Dharma and the details of Dharma. So let me explain what I mean. Principles of Dharma, what is the principle of Dharma? Basically, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. That Dharma comes from Krishna, and the ultimate principle of Dharma is what? Surrender. Everybody knows that verse? Sarva dharma pricaja mamikam sharanam praja. Ham tvam sarvapapavyo. Moksha yashami vasucha. That's the ultimate Dharma. And other Dharmas are sometimes called upadharmas or upadharmas. And not going to get into those details right now. So, ultimately, we're meant to surrender to Krishna, right? And so, in doing so, we're given a lot of details. The Vedic literatures are full of details about things to be done in the process of surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, or becoming Krishna conscious. So, sometimes we actually concentrate on the details rather than on the goal of Krishna consciousness. So the dharmic principles are called principles, and the details are different things that help us achieve the goal of Krishna consciousness. However, sometimes details have to be sacrificed in order to achieve the goal. Now, that may sound like weird. I'm not talking about sacrificing the four regulative principles, sacrificing the chanting of the Lord's holy names, but I'm talking about things that are not siddhanta. So that's another word. Siddhanta means perfect conclusion. So what do I mean? Let's give examples of what a siddhanta is. Siddhanta is, one aspect of the siddhanta is that we're not the body. We're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are all siddhantic. In other words, they cannot be changed under any circumstance. And on the other hand, we have certain details. And, you know, details like how we dress, or the type of tilak we put on, or our sika. These are all details. These are not principles of Krishna consciousness. I mean, sometimes people equate the details with the principles. For example, we were speaking to one devotee about why we have sikhas, and there's a common ISKCON misunderstanding that we have sikhas so people can take us, so God can take us back to Godhead. You know, so he's going to drag us by our sikha back to Godhead. Prabhupada said that jokingly one time. So the devotees are saying, you know, if you don't have a sikha, Krishna's not going to be able to take you back to Godhead. So then the poor people who are bald, they're going to have a hard time going back to Godhead. And the women will certainly go back to Godhead because there's no problem dragging them back by their hair. So anyway, so I'm not saying we shouldn't have sikhas. That's not my point. But we have to be able to differentiate the essentials from those things that may help us under certain circumstances or not help us under other circumstances. I mean, for example, detail mentioned in the Mahabharata is truthfulness. And actually, it's important to be truthful. Krishna himself says in the Gita that the austerities of speech are what? Satya Priya Hitam. Speaking truthfully, pleasingly, beneficially. Yes, we agree with that. We're not going to disagree with Krishna. But sometimes one may have to sacrifice the detail of truthfulness for a higher purpose. Can anyone think of a story from the Mahabharata where that was inculcated, where Krishna advised that? Ashwatthama. Yeah, Ashwatthama is dead. Sometimes one may have to sacrifice his vows. I'm not talking about four regulative principles. There's 16 rounds here. Please don't misquote me. You know, I get in trouble. So, for example, Grandfather Bhishma, he made a vow. What was his vow? His vow was to uphold whoever was the emperor or the king of Hastinapur. Yet, because he kept that vow, he became involved in a dharma in different ways. One way he became involved in a dharma was that he allowed the disrobing or the attempted disrobing of Draupadi. Another way is that he fought on the wrong side of the battle of Kurukshetra. So many ways he became involved in adharma. So in other words, one has to know the purpose behind the Vedic injunctions. And of course, the purpose is clearly mentioned by Krishna in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 15. Do people know that verse? No. Vedais charsave rama vivejo. I mean, like Prabhupada changed many of the details too, just to preach Krishna consciousness, and didn't change the details. He didn't follow some of the details. Just to preach Krishna consciousness. He crossed an ocean. He associated with us. I mean, that was a very strong injunction in the Vedic literature. You don't associate with malechas. If you even see the face of a malecha, what are you supposed to do? Jump in the Ganges. Don't even change your clothes or put on a swimming suit. You know, if we followed that injunction, we'd be going around with bottles of Ganges water spraying each other constantly throughout the day. Can you imagine that? Hi, Mom. You know, so you do have all these injunctions. And, of course, the Vedic literature is full of different injunctions. So, of course, we know how to apply different injunctions or different details according to Srila Prabhupada's directions. And also according to common sense, when not to, like, insist on certain details because it may be counterproductive for spreading Krishna consciousness. So in order to ascertain what's important, you have to keep in mind what the goal is. And of course we know, according to Srila Rupa Goswami, that the first rule of Krishna consciousness is what? Always remember Krishna. And the second rule is what? Never forget Krishna. It's interesting, isn't it? Always remember Krishna. And so you have to sometimes adjust things accordingly. And again, I state not to break the regulative principles, but adjust things accordingly in order to accomplish that particular goal, in order to accomplish bringing people to Krishna consciousness. You know, Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, in order to bring people to Krishna consciousness, we should be willing to shed gallons or liters or whatever of blood. And Prabhupada also gave us this one principle. He said, utility is the principle insofar as spreading Krishna consciousness. So we have to be ready to keep in our minds what the goal is of Krishna consciousness so we can adjust everything accordingly. And according to the instructions of the Shastras, according to the instructions of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So here, we find, in this particular verse, we find Aditi is very morose, and Kashyap is inquiring about whether religious principles have been broken, because when religious principles, and I'm not saying details, have been broken, then an inauspicious atmosphere is created. So the principles of Krishna consciousness are not simply chosen in such a way that makes it difficult for people to follow. The principles of Krishna consciousness are chosen for the reason of accomplishing the goal. For example, let's talk about the four regulative principles. The four regulative principles are chosen because if you don't follow them, the mode of ignorance will become prominent, and if you don't follow them, then there'll be some karmic reaction. So it's not that they're just chosen because some ritualistic brahmanas consider those, or because we want to engage in austerities that are different than our particular culture. There's a reason behind the principles of Krishna consciousness, and there's a reason behind chanting the holy name. So anyway, so I make this class short. That's what I wanted to talk about this morning. The purport was short, and we spoke extensively yesterday, so we can take some questions. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
It's always a debate about what is a principle and what is a detail.
Yeah.
And so we have Prabhupada, what he's presenting, we accept.
Yes, obviously.
But after Prabhupada, you know, you sort of get sometimes different camps, you know, fanatically following this thing, and, you know, it's like, so, officially in ISKCON, I mean, what's the decision-making process to establish what is eternal principle in a detail? Do we have something like that?
Well, we have different devotees who are discussing something called hermeneutics. Now, that's a big word for some of you. That doesn't refer to a person named Herman. It refers to how you understand the instructions of the Shastra and the instructions of the spiritual master, and how do you apply those particular instructions. So, senior devotees, there's a committee, and the senior devotees are meeting and discussing these different things. At the same time, we have to understand in our Krishna consciousness movement, we're going to have people who are more conservative, and people who are more conservative, basically meaning more concentrating on the details, and people who are more liberal, more concentrating on the purpose. And sometimes if you get too liberal, you actually throw away the purpose too. So there's something called a dialectic. You've heard of that word before? Dialectic means, you know, thesis, antithesis, to use Marx's expressions, and then synthesis. So it's like a pendulum. It swings one way, it swings another way. So our devotees, based on the desire to please Srila Prabhupada, come to a synthesis of what's the proper understanding. So this takes mature discussion of the senior devotees. But we need to have people who are pushing the envelope. I was just reading an interesting article yesterday about how there's different people surrounding any institution. One are the just like the core group, the people who are just very conservative and they do whatever they're told. And the other people are the ones who are right on the edge, not outside the society, but pushing the envelope. And so those people are necessary in order to, let's say, increase in a religious institution, increase the numbers and attract more people to the society. Because we as devotees, we become very much internalized after a while. And even our language becomes, to a certain extent, not understandable by the people in general. I mean, for example, I use many terms from the 1960s because I've been captive by the Krishna consciousness movement for the last, you know, God knows how many years. And so many of the, much of the nomenclature, like I'll say something to someone, let's say, for example, that is very cool. And nobody understands. I mean, that's from the hippie generation. It's cool, man, you know. But nowadays, there's other language. I don't know if you use this language here in Australia, but if you say that, oh, he's really bad, it means he's good. You know, I didn't understand that. You know, someone came up to me one time and said, Marge, you're really bad. And I said, have you ever heard of a mad elephant offense before? So can you translate that language? You know, bad means good. Anyways, so there's, so we have to be aware, you know, those people who are pushing the envelope are also aware of what's happening in society at large as well as the internal going-on in the society. And in this regard, they can help us understand how to adjust certain details so that our movement does not become irrelevant. Because that's the last thing we want. I mean, if you look at the Christianity, for example, I mean, it's an interesting example, that in the beginning, they were very much concentrating on the details. The beginning of Christianity was mostly, it was a Jewish sect. And they have many details, things they do in the Jewish sect that are details, you know, just not essential things. Like, well, I don't know if I should give that example, it's too intimate. But anyway, they have some details like how you wear your hair, you know, a skull cap that you put on your hair, different dietary restrictions and everything like that. And then what happened, along came, and because so they remained a very small group. So along came someone named Paul. Maybe you've heard of him, Saul or Paul in Christianity. And he sort of de-emphasized the details. I mean, too much, actually. Too much. I mean, he threw away, actually, the rules and regulations. He went too far. But because he did what he did, Christianity was able to spread quite widely around the world. So we can learn from that particular instance that we don't want to throw things away. You know, we don't want to start with three regulated principles, two regulated principles, or, you know, smoking marijuana in the temple. You know, certainly, like in Fiji, for example. We spend a lot of time in Fiji. Practically all the Ram Mandirs, that means where they preach about the Ramayana, they have as part of their ceremony taking this drink called kava. I think Shingananda knows about that. And so, wow, so many people come. The place is crowded. Not because they want to hear about Ram, because the men want to sit around and talk nonsense the rest of the night after drinking the kava. And if you don't have kava, hardly anyone will come. So it's not that we should start doing that to attract people to Krishna consciousness, because that's against our principles. But we can do certain things, like I was with Prabhupada one time, and Prabhupada arranged for, during the kirtan, it wasn't in the temple room, it was outside the temple room, for someone to play a bass guitar to lead the kirtan. And everyone was up and jumping and dancing, and Prabhupada was smiling during the whole thing. Prabhupada was quite revolutionary and liberal in his application of Krishna consciousness. Just like last night we were talking about how Prabhupada dealt with ladies in the Krishna consciousness movement. In particular, I was talking about Jamuna Devi. Has anyone read her book, her biography?
Yeah.
It's really nice. I mean, you get a really different perspective on how, you know, devotees should deal, you know, the different men and women should deal with each other, or how Prabhupada dealt with the ladies from Jamuna's books, especially the first volume of Jamuna's book. And you see how liberal Prabhupada was. And sometimes we become so conservative. This is a saying in Christianity that someone is more religious than the Pope. In other words, become more conservative than Prabhupada in applying Krishna consciousness. And, you know, we've seen this tendency as the time goes on. The Prabhupada sometimes was asked about different rituals, and his reply was, if you want to know about them, ask my God brothers. Mm-hmm. And different things. And, you know, everything's become much more complex. The deity worship has become... I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying that if we set our barriers too high for our practices in Krishna consciousness, then we're going to exclude a lot of people who could become Krishna conscious. If everything becomes so complex and ritualistic, at that point, we're going to be a very small group.
When Srila Prabhupada first met his Guru Maharaj, he was given the instruction to preach in English, basically, and that was his guiding principle.
Yeah.
But for many, many years, there was really no results. But still, he had that instruction, so he just stuck with it. But as Islam developed, it became very results-based. Prabhupada wanted to see results. So is the direction that we're going for preaching, if the results are there, therefore it's good? Is that the only criteria?
No. I mean, first of all, we have to analyze what are results. You know, the results, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that if he could make one person Krishna conscious, then his whole mission would be successful. So we don't want to be concentrate on the point that results means numbers. We want to understand that results means quality rather than quantity. So, yes, results are important, but quality, I think, is much more important than quantity. You know, you can just, like, make a lot of Kanishtha Adhikaris, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur compared that to many stars in the sky as compared to a moon. So we'd much rather have one or two moons than thousands of little stars. Of course, that doesn't mean we throw all of our devotees away and say, you're just a star. I'm a moon. I mean, that's not the right consciousness, but we want to deepen the Krishna consciousness of the devotees. And so what does it mean to deepen the Krishna consciousness of the devotees? To help them progress from the different stages of Adoshrata, Tata, Sadhu, Sangota, Bhajana, Kriya, to go from the initial stage of just interest and faith to being very strong sadhakas, to getting rid of the anarthas in the heart, to ultimately coming to the stage of bhava and prema, becoming attached to Krishna. Like Prabhupada gave the instruction to a temple president one time. He said, your business is to make sure the devotees are always jolly and also have enough prasadam. He gave those two instructions. So jolly means, you know, jolly means becoming happy. Happiness comes from internalizing your Krishna. So we have an internal path of Krishna consciousness that we should concentrate on with the devotees. That internal path, actually, incidentally, we were talking about that. The internal path is actually elaborated on by Raghunath Das Goswami in his Manakshiksha. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments on that. So we have the internal path, the external path. The internal path is more important. Does that answer your question? Yeah, we want quality. Not just numbers of books distributed. Not just numbers of devotees, but qualified devotees. Education. So, any other questions or comments? Yes.
I was just going to make one comment to add to Amanda Gopal's first point about, like, you know, there may be different camps, like even with the Eskon and some, with regards to the understanding about what is a core principle and what is a detail.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one thing that we all agree on within Eskon is to adhere to Srila Prabhupada's teachings and to what's in our
Shastra.
And I do believe, you know, found this myself, that quite often there is a lacking in devotees actually studying what is in the books properly. It is actually explained there what is a detail and what is a core principle.
Very good point. It's books, not understanding, not studying Prabhupada's books. And as the time goes on, people's inclination towards reading goes down. In general society, and I think I attribute a lot of that to the, you know, the gadgets that people have, or the lack of span of attention that people have in modern society. So there needs to be more training, in reading Prabhupada's book. Obviously, I mean, the details are obviously given by Srila Prabhupada in his books. If you take the totality of the books rather than taking something out of context, and the totality of Prabhupada's teaching, and Prabhupada's example. For example, I mentioned the Jamuna Devi's biography. If you take the example there, and you put them all together, and then you can understand how to apply Krishna consciousness. So any other questions? Very good point. Yes? We have a question from the audience and the outside, yeah.
Just on your question of deity worship, you were speaking about it. Seems like in Ishtar, I agree with you, I've been around for a while, that there's sort of, there's like a two-fold approach to deity worship. Like, one is through the Pancharatrika system, whereby you observe all the cleanliness standards, all the standards of procedure, so forth and so on. And with that, if you don't really come up to the standard, unfortunately, you're not able to participate in the deity worship. Whereas the other way, I'll just give the example, when Prabhupada came to Sydney, he accidentally, I think, ended up with Radha Gopinath.
Yeah.
And he brought it to Sydney and he prayed to Radha Gopinath, well, putting your hand
in the Malachas.
Yeah, and these people are not, you know, it's up to you to train them. So that seems to be the second school of thought.
I just wondered,
maybe
you want to make it. Well, I mean, certainly when Prabhupada first installed Radhakrishna deities everywhere, we weren't qualified to worship them. Prabhupada gave the two most important principles in deity worship were cleanliness and punctuality. And then other things can be added. The other things can be added, but if you don't have those two most important principles, those are the foundational principles that Prabhupada gave, then Krishna won't accept the offerings. So, I mean, that's my comment. I don't want to get into really, like, which details, or do we have too many details in deity worship, because that's a controversial point. The main thing is, whatever details we have should be adjusted to allow devotees who can stick to the main principles of cleanliness and punctuality to participate in deity worship. If you raise your details to a level that you're discouraging people, that's counterproductive. Because the whole purpose of deity worship, the whole purpose of everything, is to make us Krishna conscious. And if everything becomes so complex that we just can't do it, or we're discouraging people, or people don't want to join us because it's just they see us as a bunch of very ritualistic people, then we're actually acting counter to our purpose. So purposes always have to be remembered. When you're chanting Hare Krishna, you have to remember why you're doing what you're doing. When you're chanting, every morning you're chanting the Shikshastra prayers, you should be conscious of why you're chanting what you're chanting. There should be an intention. Before every ceremony, before every activity in Krishna consciousness, there's something called the sankalpa. The sankalpa means the intention. Like if you ever do a marriage, then you have this whole sankalpa. We are here today on the 10th day of the moon, in the month of so-and-so, at the time or whatever, and we're performing this marriage. So what we do often in Krishna consciousness is that we become ritualistic. Even in principles, we become ritualistic. Even when executing our principles, we become what I mean is niyamagraha. That we're doing what we're doing, but we're on automatic. You know, wake me up when my japa's done. Or like Prabhupada jokingly said one time, he was moving his counter beads down. He said, oh, thank God I finished 16 rounds, now I can do any damn thing. You know, so we put ourselves on automatic. It's like, I gave this example in some other class recently, that sometimes when the pilots are flying a plane, they put the plane on autopilot. You've heard of this before? That means there's an electronic, let's say, device or programming in the plane where the plane can actually fly itself. So the pilots can just sit and talk with each other and, you know, whatever, talk to the stewardesses, whatever they're going to do. So there's been several incidents in the United States where the pilots put the plane on autopilot and it overshot the airport by several hundred kilometers. You know, so the plane just keep going, going, going. Finally, they try to reach him on the radio. Hey, United 22, where are you? Wake up. So finally, the guys wake up. They turn the plane around. And, you know, they land the plane, hopefully safely. And so this has happened a number of times. So we do that with our japa, with our principles of Krishna consciousness. Chanting, reading, Bhagavatam class. I mean, how many people sleep during Bhagavatam class or sleep with their eyes open during Bhagavatam class or inattentive during Bhagavatam class? So this is a very important point, that we always have to be thinking, why am I here? What am I doing? Why am I chanting my japa? What is my intention? What is my goal? Because if you're not goal-oriented, then whether you're doing principles or details, the whole thing is becomes a detriment to devotional service, niyamagraha, according to Srila Rupa Goswami. So the whole point is to understand why we're doing what we're doing. Why are we doing deity worship? Yeah. We're doing it to purify ourselves, to develop love of Krishna, and to attract others to the Krishna conscious movement. Think about it. Everything, why are you sitting here in Bhagavatam class? Because you have to. Why are you chanting your japa? Because you have to. No, because you want to be Krishna conscious. You want to please Krishna. You want to please your spiritual master. You want to be empowered to preach Krishna consciousness. You want to be empowered to help others. Otherwise, you're treating your detail, your principles like details, expendable details. Does everyone understand that point? Okay, any other questions? Quick questions? Thank you. Yeah, one more question.
You were mentioning getting together with senior devotees and discussing these vows, but it seems ultimately it boils down to a local level, because what we do here, what you might not do in Melbourne, so
yes,
really the local devotees
adjustment, yeah,
work out what works for four preachers.
That's right. You know, apart from the four principles, chanting Hare Krishna, rising early, which is, you know, basic principles of Krishna consciousness. But how you apply them, yes, has to be applied according to the culture, the situation you're in, where you're living, who you're working with. These are all adjustable. Anyway, don't want to get too controversial with this class. So, on that happy note, I think we should end, because there's a principle of taking prasadam. That's not a detail. All glorious through divine grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We'd like to thank everyone who joined us online. Oh yeah, ask everyone to pray. One of my godbrothers, Jagajivan Prabhu, who has been my old friend since the beginning of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, he's in critical condition in Europe. He has a heart. He's had almost heart failure, and the doctor said he may just have a few hours to live, and he may not survive the operation they want to have with him. So we ask everyone to pray to the deities for his welfare and his health. Okay, thank you. All glorious to Prabhupada.